Welcome to History from the Hill of Peace, a podcast that offers a glimpse into the rich 250-year history of Friedberg Moravian Church. Nestled on the Forsyth and Davidson County line in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, we celebrate generations of God's goodness, faithfulness, and love. Relax and enjoy as our guests take us from Friedberg's roots to where we are today.
We want to welcome you back to the History of the Hill of Peace podcast. We're so excited that you've joined us for this special episode. As Friedberg Moravian Church celebrates its 250th anniversary, there's so many stories to tell about the church itself, its humble roots, and the people who shaped it. During each episode, we feature a story, read the Moravian Daily Text, and have some surprise visitors join us along the way. Today, I want to welcome back a voice that we know oh so well here on the podcast, Jimmy Snyder. As you guys may know, if you've listened to any of the previous podcasts, he's a part of our 250th Church Anniversary Committee. He's leading the recently expanded Historical Committee. He's been involved in the Moravian Provincial Band for a really, really long time. He's Vice President of the Wachovia Historical Society, and I'm sure we can name some additional things. But we're so excited to have you back. And like our last episode, Jimmy and I are sitting in the church historical room. We got so much positive feedback about what we talked about here in the historical room, we decided to make another visit and talk about some other additional really interesting historical items. So Jimmy, welcome back.
Well, thank you. Thank you for letting me come back. It's a lot of fun to do these episodes, and the historical room is a great place to come to do them because we've got so many things we can choose from, and we don't have to do an entire episode on one item. We can spread it around, talk about 5, 6, 7 items if we want to. A lot we can look at and talk about down here.
We can, and it gives people an option to actually come and physically see these items that we're talking about as well, instead of a story that you kind of have to use your imagination on a little bit.
Yeah, we like visitors coming in, and so come down, contact me, come down, and we'll take a look at it and let you look at some of this stuff you're going to hear about.
Absolutely. Well, what items are we going to chat about today?
Oh, gee, there are so many things in here to look at and to talk about. Let's just do a few of them that are very interesting. Against the north wall of the room, and you know, I'm going to have to use directions a little bit in the room because we're not using pictures as much, so we'll use a few directions. But on the north wall of the room is 3 pulpit chairs that were used by the congregation starting in about the 1880s. I'm not 100% certain, but we do have pictures of the chairs in the pulpit in the 1890s. So you knew we had them a few years before that, but it's 3 chairs. It's the main chair for the minister, and it's 2 side chairs. And we have a wonderful picture on the wall down here of the pulpit, which at that time was a small room that was added on to the side of the church, and it stuck out from the side of the church, and that was just for the pulpit. It had the 3 chairs in it, had a communion table in it, and had a lectern in it to speak from, and that was about it. It wasn't a big room. But we're blessed to still have these chairs in as nice a shape as they are. I believe they're walnut. Not 100% certain on that, but they're covered in leather. And the leather, to be as old as they are, is in great condition. So if you come down to look at it, we'll let you look at the chairs, but we request that there is no sitting in these chairs.
Right, we want to preserve them the way they are.
Yeah, and talk about sitting in the chairs. When Bishop Chris Geisler came down here in May for our anniversary love feast, and he did the sermon that morning. After the service was over that afternoon, the love feast was over, Chris and his wife came down here. Now, A lot of people may not know, but Chris grew up at Freedburg. His daddy was Reverend John Geisler, and Chris came here as a young boy. The parsonage had just been built in 1958, and Chris and his family moved into the parsonage. And when Chris came down to visit after the May Love Feast, I got kind of tickled. I was in the room with him, and he was just looking at some things in here that brought back some memories. And he looked over in the corner to where this one particular chair sits. And he got this strange look on his face. And he told me, he said, "I remember that chair. That chair used to be in Bishop Geisler's bedroom as a child." And he played on that chair as a child. And finally, his daddy, the Reverend John Geisler, said, we really ought to take that chair over to the church before we tear it up in the parsonage here. So they brought the chair over to the church where it's been ever since. The chair was made in 1760, 1770, somewhere around that time frame. It is a beautiful communion chair. Has a leather bottom to it, and it is the original leather bottom.
And it's a beautiful brown leather.
Yes. I don't know what color it was originally. How much has it aged and the patina on it over the years? The young Bishop Geisler sliding on and off of it as a child. But there are several of that design that are in the Moravian Archives building and the Moravian Music Foundation's building. All of theirs, though, have cloth bottoms. Their chairs the leather seats did not survive where ours did survive.
Even after a little love from a young gentleman playing on it, it still survived.
It's still here and still in great shape.
It is in really good shape.
That's another chair that we say, look at it, but please don't sit on it. Yeah, we have plenty of chairs in the historical room to sit on. We have a collection of chairs. We're going to transition a little here. We have a selection of chairs that came out of Sunday school classrooms. They were used in the choir loft for the choir to use. Some of them have padded bottoms, some don't. The bottoms of the chairs are laced together. Others are just a solid piece of wood. Several different style of chairs that were used at different times, different time periods during the church's history. We even have some for children. We have the small children's chairs that were used in Sunday school classes for the children. So we have a wide assortment of chairs in here that you can sit in when you come down to visit.
And these chairs that he's talking about right now are actually pretty comfortable. I've sat in quite a few of them over the years.
They're not bad chairs at all. Some of them look a little fragile, like two right here with the rounded seat in them. They look a little fragile, but they're really not as fragile as you might think. They're well-made chairs. So they've been here a while at Freedburg, and we have enough of them in here where we could probably seat maybe 20, 25 people with no problem. So if you have a group that's wanting to come down and visit the room, we have room for you. And speaking of chairs, we have two fiberglass chairs from the 1960s. These things are ugly. That's the only way I know of to describe them. These are the two we have down here are kind of an aqua green color.
Yeah, they're definitely they're a light aqua marina. Yeah.
It's a 1960s fiberglass chair. We used to have several of them here at the church in various colors. And of course, were some of Jimmy Newsom's favorite chairs here. But I say that jokingly. But we have two of them because I wanted to get them in the room, not because we particularly liked them, but it's part of history to let people see what was here. One of the interesting things that was done with some of these chairs of the different colors is somebody went down in the children's playground and made a school bus out of them for the seating for the school bus. So they came in handy.
And they are well made, and like you said, they were made in the 60s, so they will outlast so many people, and they are going to withstand the test of time.
I don't think we can destroy them. They're going to be here for a while. But that just moved. We went through several layers of chairs here. We can go on to other items if you wish.
Yes, let's do that. What else is
Well, we have a communion set. That's sitting on the south, on the north wall also. This is a 8-level wood communion tray. It looked like the silver ones we use during communion now, but this was made out of wood and it's 8 levels. It would hold, I believe, 60 communion cups. And it has not been used in years and years, but I think Jimmy Newsom is giving some thought to using it in the fairly near future. He may make use of this communion set. Also on the same table with the communion set are 2 tall glass decanters for the wine to go in for communion. And then there's 2 shorter decanters, you might call them. They look like a mug with the lid on them. And they were for the wafer for communion to go in. These were made the closest we can come. I've had a lot of people to look at them and give me an age estimate, but at best we can figure these were made in the late 1700s. And they're beautiful. One of them's got a pretty decent break in it, but it's on the back side, so it's not very noticeable. They are very nice. They really stand out some.
And with the way the light shines on them here in the historical room, they glisten and you can see all the detail in the glass. They're beautiful.
It's a leaded glass that's been cut, and it is pretty. There's no doubt about that. So we can move on to other things now, if you wish.
One thing I would like to mention to our listeners is the shape of the communion trays that you were talking about. When we think about communion trays today, we think about the round communion trays because that's what we're really used to using. But these are more oval shaped.
They are.
Which just make them more unique when you look at them.
I have never seen another set quite like these. And I would love to know more about the history of them. But one of the problems you come into when you're looking at the history of a church, it is not like you can just go to a computer and pull up and get information. You've got to do a lot of reading. And to find things like that, you have to find when it was purchased, where it was purchased, how did the church come into ownership of it. That takes a lot of reading of board notes and minutes. And when people say board, when you sit down and start reading these minutes, board is a good term to use. They get dry a lot of times if you're trying to read them. But if you're just looking for one particular thing, it's going to be awful hard to find it. So you hope that you're looking for one thing and then something else reaches you and says, okay, this is what we needed. Board minutes are closed for 72 years. There are ways to get in and look at the minutes, but you just can't go to archives and pull up the board minutes for 10 years ago. Archives will tell you, no, you can't see them yet. So it's a 72 year. And the reason for that is to try not to embarrass anybody. And it allows the boards the freedoms to have discussions that they need to have that they don't want everybody to know about at the time. So giving it the 72-year time frame, that gets through most people's life expectancy, so you're not as likely to embarrass a person anymore. So I understand why they do it that way.
Fair enough, and yeah, you're spot on with board minutes. They are not the most interesting reads by any means. But you never know. You may stumble across something.
Well, that's what happens a lot. You know, there's one thing historians say, that they make their greatest finds when they stumble across something while looking for something else. That is so true. It's like the Records of the Moravians in North Carolina. It's a 13-volume set. And you can sit down and you look through these, and it's minutes for the boards in Salem. It's minutes from the boards in the outlying churches. It's the diaries that the ministers kept for their congregations. And they're all online. So you can go online and you can do a word search. Like if you do Friedberg, you type in Friedberg, hit search, and it will give you in that volume every time Friedberg is mentioned. Well, the only problem is it doesn't tell you what's on the page before Friedberg was mentioned or what was on the page after Friedberg was mentioned. So I would much rather, I have a set of my own, and I had much rather sit at home and go through the books than I had to look online for them. While we're on this subject, a person has given the church a complete set of the Records of the Moravians in North Carolina. It's 13 volumes. This set is going to be put in the library on the main floor of the education building, where people can come in and do research on these books on their own. Now, we're going to have some rules on it, such as you don't bring ink pens into the room. You do not take the books out of the room. You can do your research inside the room, but you can't take the books out of the room. Friedberg's library is unique in that we do have a lending library. So people can come in, check out books, read them, bring them back. But we're not going to be able to check these books out. Once we get it all set up and all the details set up on how we're going to use them, we're going to be making an announcement to the congregation on how to use these books. And they're exciting to read because they're excerpts. They're not the full board minutes. They're not the full diaries. But the important things and the exciting things have been brought out of those minutes and put into these books. So that's something to look forward to in the near future.
Yes, and I know our volunteers are anxiously awaiting and very excited about putting those books in the library so we can use them all as reference material.
Yes, that's what they're designed for, and that's the reason they were given to us, is so they could be used as reference materials.
Well, I'm excited about breaking into those books once they're available, and I hope our listeners will do the same thing.
Interesting. So now, you ready to move on to something
else? Yes. What else? There's so much stuff in this room.
I don't know how much you want to cover at a time. You had mentioned to me earlier about the weather vane that's hanging on the wall here in the historical room. The weather vane that's hanging on the wall in the historical room is a reproduction of the Friedberg weather vane. The original of the Friedberg weather vane is right now, it's in storage in Old Salem Museum and Gardens in their storage facility. They were nice enough when we loaned it to them. It was used originally in the boys' school at the corner of Academy Street and Main Street. And when you walked in the front door, the weather vane was in a case just as you walked in the door. Well, they have remodeled, revamped, whatever you want to call it at the boys' school. And they had to take a lot of the exhibits out, plus the annex that was behind it has been torn down, so they don't have enough display room anymore. But they still have the weather vane. One of the interesting things about it is the original weather vane is broken right in the middle. It's made out of tin, or I think it's tin. It's kind of rusty, really hard to tell. But it has a break right in the middle of it. And it was like that when we loaned it to Old Salem. So it's not anything they did. They look after it very well. But they did make us a exact replica without the break.
Okay.
So we could hang it up in here. We could see what the weather vane looked like.
Yeah, so the weather vane is about, would you say that's about 2 foot in length?
Yeah, probably.
And it's made out of tin, and it's really interesting that when you look at it, the word Freiburg, with a period at the end, is cut out of the middle section of the tin.
And it's cut out a lot like if you would look at, you would go and stencil the name on something. That's the cut you're looking at on this weather vane. I mean, it would be so easy to put it up over on a board and spray paint it and, you know, have the name to transfer off. I don't recommend doing that.
No.
But that's what it reminds you of. And it's got an arrow on one side of it that would be pointed into the wind the way it's designed. It was on the roof of the church where it would turn with the wind, so you would know what direction the wind was coming out of. And then it's got little tail on the end of it. Looks like, I don't know, almost like flames.
Yeah, you know? It almost.
So I'm not real sure what they patterned that after. It's an interesting weather vane, and like I said, it is on permanent loan, you might say, to Old Salem Museum and Garden.
Absolutely. And you know, even though this is a replica, you can kind of see how it could have definitely got well worn being on top of the church. And can you imagine though the way the sun would shine through those stenciling?
Oh,
like
yeah.
Just right, how beautiful that would have been.
It's nice to have the replica of it here.
Yeah, so we can appreciate
and
it.
And right now I think I would probably just be as happy with having this replica as we would with the original, considering the original was broken and it would be a lot more fragile than this replica is. So I'm glad we have it.
Absolutely. It's a nice addition to the historical room.
Now, talking about things to go on the roof of the building. In the display case, one of the glass display cases, there is a sharp pointed object that has a rounded bottom to it. It's round at the bottom, kind of like a little small ball or like a kid's ball. And then it comes up four sides into a point at the top of it. It looks like it has been painted with some type of paint like you'd use on a barn roof or something, you know, over the years. So it's been painted. There's an interesting story behind this. This piece was actually the old steeple off of the 1823 church. And it sat right on top of the steeple and came to a point, you know how most steeples have a cap on the top of them that come to a point. Well, this is the same way. And when you pick it up and look at it, the bottom of it looks like it's spread apart, but if you push it together just slightly, you could actually see where the square roof was under it, where it was nailed to the roof of the 1823 church. Now, we almost lost it. When the 1823 church was being torn down in the 1970s to make room for our current church, a lot of things got thrown in the trash. And there was a big pile of debris out in front of the church that got hauled off every so often. Mark Kimmel called me one day a few years back and he said, I got something you might be interested in. So I met him down here and he walks in with this. Mark had been stopping off, as a lot of members of the church did during the time of the demolition of the old church and getting ready to build the new church.
Everybody was checking it out.
Everybody was interested in it. You know, so he was just one of many who was interested. Well, he spotted this steeple on top of a pile of debris that was going to be hauled off to the landfill. And Mark said, I don't want that to go to the landfill. So Mark took it home with him down here off Frybridge Road, and put it up in his barn where it laid for years up in the barn loft. You know, we had a conversation earlier about how things end up in lofts and barn lofts and the attics of houses and all that. Well, that's what happened to this. It ended up in Mark's barn. And he came across it one day and said, we need to get that down to the church. So Mark brought it down here to me, and it is now on display in one of the glass display cases that we have in the historical room.
And it looks so great sitting over there. It's like the case is made for it, that shelf, so it sits there. And it's lengthwise, it's probably a foot and a half long, but you know, it's a great piece of history that we can appreciate. Thanks to Mark for saving it.
Thanks to Mark for taking care of it over these many years and not allowing it to go to the dump.
Oh yes, absolutely. And like, when, I'm sure when he saved it, it was just, oh, that's nice, I want to keep it. Not, oh, it'll end up in the historical room one day.
That's the way a lot of things happen at times.
Jimmy, this has been fun. Thank you so much for talking about some of these other items here in the historical room. How fascinating. I hope our listeners will find it just as interesting as I have. So, Jimmy, thank you once again for joining us, and hopefully we can do this again very soon. We want to welcome to the podcast Sherry Edwards. She's a first-time guest with us. She joined Freeburg Moravian Church in 1991. She is active in the Women's Fellowship Circle 3. She's a member of the Discovery Sunday School class. She has previously served on the Board of Elders, and in fact, she was the first female vice chair of the Board of Elders. And she has served on the Women's Fellowship Executive Board. Now, she's on the podcast today with us because she currently chairs the Mission Committee here at Freeburg. So we're really excited to have you with us. And I can't wait to learn more about the Mission Committee and let our listeners know about what it is, how it works, and kind of what Freeburg supports through the Mission Committee. So let's just hit the ground running today, Sherry. And can you just tell me about the Mission Committee?
Well, thank you for having me. And the Mission Committee at Freeburg is very active in the mission field. The Moravians have always had a reputation for going to places that are hard to get to, places that other people don't want to be. And we have carried on that tradition here at Freeburg. We have the only mission committee that is financially structured where people can give to missions. They can get credit for that on their giving statements, but those funds are only used to support mission activities here at Freeburg and those missionaries that we have pledged to financially support each year. So that is a unique situation that we have here, and our congregation is very faithful to continue support.
Absolutely. I know when we talk about missions, a lot of people in Freeburg are very pro-mission. They are strong and great supporters of the Mission Committee. So thank you guys for everything you do. And, you know, as the chair of the Mission Committee, what exactly does that role look like for you?
Well, as chair of the Mission Committee, I'm really more of an administrator, facilitator type person. We have right now about 16 members of our Mission Committee. My role is to make sure that we keep a budget, that we meet our pledges, that we, you know, pay our pledges each quarter. And also, I am the contact point for those that might want to go out in the mission field or have other mission efforts that they want us to support. Then I coordinate that with the Mission Committee for them to come to the committee, talk about their need, talk about their mission, talk about their goals. And then we, as a group, determine if that's meets what our mission fund is designed for, and if yes, then we decide how much money we want to provide for that mission, or we might go back to that person and say, this is really not what this mission fund is for.
Gotcha. And what have some of those trips been that have come before the Mission Committee?
We have just recently had someone come to us who wants us to help. It really isn't a trip, but to help fund some dormitories in the Czech Republic. In the Czech Republic, they have not been able to have Christian schools for many, many years, and they have just recently gotten permission from the government to have a Christian school, and so they are wanting to build dormitories. We have a relationship with this Czech Republic school. That is back when the Ukrainian war started. They were trying to build some extra rooms and extra space for children that were coming from Ukraine. And so that's how we started that relationship a little over a year ago, and we are continuing to get requests, and so that's something that we're looking at now.
Wow, that's exciting. Wow, what an opportunity there.
Another example would be a young woman here at Friedberg, Anna Stewart Faircloth, came to us about a year ago, and Anna felt a call to work with Young Life. And she specifically wanted to work with middle school age youth. And so Anna had a heart for that. She wanted a two-year commitment. She had a certain amount of funds that she needed to raise so that she could do her mission full time. And that's one of the things that keeps me working with missions is I'll never forget, missions is so transformational. And you never know when you go out on a mission field, what you expect and what God has happens is always different. Anna truly knows that. And one of the things that Anna said that just resonated with me so much is with these youth, she says you have to go where they are, but you can't leave them where they're at.
That's so good. That hits the nail on the head there.
That's what mission is all about. You have to go where they are, but your goal cannot be to leave them where they're at.
For sure. And, you know, you mentioned her. Actually, if you go back to a couple podcasts before this one, we spoke with Jennifer Bowles, who is, well, she served as the former youth director here at Friedberg, and she actually talks about her mission from being a youth at Friedberg to kind of where she is now. So you've kind of told us another piece of her story. So I strongly encourage our listeners to go back to listen to Jennifer Bowles' story as well. It's really eye-opening, and it warms your heart when you really hear her whole story. You just mentioned a couple things that the committee does. Now, who exactly does the committee support?
We have both long-term commitments, financial commitments, and we have short-term. For the long-term, we have 12 individuals that are out in the mission field. Some are in Croatia, some are in Kenya, some are right here in Winston-Salem. And we pledge an annual amount to their mission. We have 3 that are on college campuses that we support. We have young people. We have some that have been in the mission field for 20 plus years. Right now, all of the missionaries that we support were at some point Moravians. Several of them actually grew up here at Friedberg. Phil Rayford is a good example of that, where Phil and Eunice are in Mexico. And Phil had a desire and a vision that he wanted to start a mission with the people in Mexico, and he wanted to be in the community and live with those folks. And that was his vision from a very young man, I mean, almost out of high school.
Wow.
And so that is an example where Friedberg doesn't provide 100% of his financial support, but we do provide support. We have, then the example that I gave with Anna Stewart, we have a 2-year commitment. And so, you know, we don't know what Anna will do after her commitment with Young Life, but we will see where it takes her in 2 years. Our budget right now for the pledged amount is $51,000, which is staggering to some of the other folks that might look at that amount. But we have a generous congregation. We have a congregation that knows the importance of mission, knows the importance of our commitment to these young people and these that are in the field. They cannot do their work without our support. And we also, an example of one of the locals is the Forsyth Jail and Prison Ministry. And these are where the chaplains that work with these men, and the men and women at the jail, and just the men at the prison, they couldn't do their work without having financial help, because it is a full-time job and then some for them to do that. And that has been something that has been supported by Moravians here in Winston-Salem. Friedberg has been a supporter since the ministry started at Cherry Street.
I did not know that.
We have been a supporter since the very beginning, and not only in our financial support, but our choir goes each year at Christmas and does a love feast and candlelight service. And so that's just another way that missions reaches out. The other thing that we do is to provide chicken pies to the jail staff at Christmas. And that is something that is kind of a goodwill from the chaplains to the staff, because without the staff's assistance, the chaplains can't do anything. If staff aren't willing to take an inmate from their cell to an area to be able to participate in a worship service, then we can't hold those worship services. So that's another way that we do. And it's so heartening to see and hear. This past Sunday, there were 25 men at the prison who were baptized and did a public confession of their faith. It just shows the importance of that work.
Wow, that warms my heart. That's so great. Well, you mentioned all these missionaries. Now, does the mission committee support more local versus international, or is there a good blend of that?
I think there's a good blend of that. We have Michael Brent, for example, Michael and Brenda Brent, who are in Croatia, and they are with CRU, and which is a ministry that are on the college campuses, and they have been there for several years. He was originally a member of Friedland Moravian Church, and we have supported Michael and Brenda for about 26 years now, I think. We also have Michael and Cece Tesh, who are in Kenya. And I can remember one of my very first mission committee meetings that I went to. Michael was there, and he was asking for funding to purchase a cow. And I thought that was so strange that the mission committee would be funding a cow. But he was starting a mission in Kenya. He was starting an orphanage. And he had plans for it to be self-sufficient. And of course, to do that and to have milk for the orphans, he needed a cow. And of course, that orphanage has grown. Michael has since married a young woman from Kenya, Cece. They have two girls named Love and Blessing. And they were here to visit with us last year. It's just been a blessing to me to be able to watch how God has blessed and provided for these missionaries. And Michael is one that, Michael's a little bit slow, and Michael would probably never be able to accomplish here in the U.S. what he has accomplished in Kenya. And it's just another reminder of how God just uses all of us, no matter what our strengths or our weaknesses or our talents or whatever we have, he has a plan and we just need to listen. And Michael obviously has done that.
You said it perfectly. You know, God put him in the right place to do his work, which is not here, it's in Kenya. Now, out of all these people that you've mentioned, does one of these missionaries and their journey, does one of them stand out more to you than anyone else?
Probably Safi Brahma, who is in Sierra Leone. And Safi and her husband, Mohammed, were born in Sierra Leone, and they left during the Blood Diamond Wars. And they had a strong call to go back. And so they left their comfort here. They had a nice life in Charlotte. They were members of Little Church on the Lane, but they went back to Sierra Leone, and the trust and the faith the strength that they had to have to do that was just amazing. And I have been able to watch most of that ministry. And about 3 years ago, Mohammed passed. And so Safi has had to continue that ministry on her own. And she is in an environment where women cannot own property. And so the schools and all the things that they did there in their village, she had to work through with the government. And it's just been amazing to watch her go through this, she and Muhammad. It's also been amazing to watch doors that God opens that you would think, you know, just like the government now allows her to own only in that village. She can't own anywhere else in Sierra Leone.
Okay.
And the other thing that has been amazing to me is during two health crises in that area, both with COVID and when we had Ebola, we all prayed for that village, and they never had one case of either. God literally protected that village. And you know, we think about he only did those miracles in the Old Testament or whatever, but he does them every day. Just the obstacles that they've had to overcome and what they left to go back to that environment has just been amazing to me.
Wow, that is amazing. So, wow. Well, since we're talking about international missions, Freiburg has a connection with Ukraine. It's kind of a newer sort of relationship that we built, but that we do have a connection with them. So do you want to talk about that for a moment?
I'd be glad to. We had a member of our congregation came to the mission committee and said that he felt that we needed to look at sponsoring some refugees from Ukraine. And so we said we would certainly talk about it. And so we did, and we talked about it, and we prayed about it. And we thought, you know, this might be a good thing for Freiburg to do. We went to the Board of Elders and we went to the Board of Trustees because that would be a large undertaking for the congregation. And they agreed that that's something that we could look at. This was in the March-April timeframe. And we worked with the Border World Mission and we went through several avenues and just nothing ever came up. And so we thought, well, either it's not God's plan for us or it's not the right time. In October, early October, we got a call from Border World Mission, and through the relationship I mentioned earlier with Czech Republic School, there was a family that had come from Ukraine, and they needed to be in housing by the end of October. They were going to lose their place where they were in the Czech Republic.
And you guys got the call towards the beginning of October?
Toward the beginning of October. And we were like, you know, we don't think we can get the paperwork done. We can't get all this done for October 31st. But something was telling us, no, you can if you don't try. And so we started on our paperwork, working through the new process that the Biden administration had put in for the refugees. And on a Monday afternoon, it took about 5 hours to do the paperwork for all members of the family. There were four. There was a mom, a dad, and two young boys. We were trying to translate formats of addresses and things from European addresses to how it was in our forms that we were trying to do, U.S. forms. It took us about 4 hours to get it all done. And I even looked at my watch. It was like 8 minutes after five when we finished, when I hit enter on the very last one. And so we had no idea how long this would take. The next morning, about 9 o'clock, I went downstairs to my office and I had authorization from Homeland Security for all four.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe it. And I read through it two or three times because I just couldn't believe it. And so I emailed our family. I had been emailing back and forth with our Otoski family. They had gotten one of the authorizations, but not the other three. And so I emailed them their numbers, all the information they needed. By Wednesday morning, we had travel authorization for that whole family.
Wow.
And they landed in Greensboro on October 31st.
If that's not amazing, I don't know what is.
God's hand was on it. It was His intention for them to be here. We had a member here who very generously offered to let them live in a house that they had in Kernersville. We have a 2-year commitment. You had to make a 2-year commitment to be a sponsor. And then the congregation has really stepped up to help with getting cars and getting clothes and food and all of those kind of things. The family has been a real challenge and a real blessing for us. The boys are doing great. They are going to school at Kernersville Elementary. The dad, Dima, now has a full-time job with Hanes Brands. He is in the IT department. Slava, the mom, is getting ready to get her driver's license. That's been a challenge. In Kyiv, where they live, there is public transportation. And so she never drove. She has passed the written part. She has her learner's permit. We've had a hard time getting her driving lessons because all the teenagers get their drivers. They were already signed up.
Right.
So we have someone, hopefully, that is going to teach her on August the 11th, and she will get her driver's license. The boys both went to Laurel Ridge, and they just loved it. And in fact, Stefan said he wished that he could stay there till school started.
Oh, wow.
And it has been challenging for them and for us, but it has absolutely been a blessing. They are going to a church in Kernersville, which is more like the church that they attended in Kyiv. And they are really enjoying that, but they still come to Friedberg to visit. They attended our vacation Bible school, and they're just part of the family now.
They are. They're an extension of our church and our mission committee, and I think everyone here feels like they've made a difference, which they have made a difference in getting them over here, but definitely God's hand at work and the timeline and how seamless it actually went from the time they were approved to the time getting here.
And they need our prayers. They have family that are in Kyiv. They have parents that are having health issues. You know, it's still very stressful for them, but they've come a long way since last October.
So Sherry, you mentioned just in passing a moment ago the Board of World Missions. Can you kind of tell our listeners what that is if they're not familiar with it?
The Board of World Missions is comprised of all of the provinces, the Moravian provinces in the United States, the northern and southern province being the largest. And each province has a provincial share that they send to the Board of World Mission. And the Board of World Mission works with mostly international missions. And they assign like mission provinces. An example of that would be in Honduras, where we have a hospital there that the Moravians started and are continuing to support. Those are things that need more financial support and more oversight than any one congregation could do. We are now, for example, starting a mission area, they might call it, in Cuba, where our youth just went. They help coordinate and finance international activities such as that. They are elected at each synod. Each province gets so many seats at the table, if you will, and they are elected at synod. And so that is also a place where, as the example with our Ukrainian family, when you're trying to make a connection or you need to create a relationship, the Board of World Mission can help facilitate that.
All right. Thank you for telling our listeners more about that. I appreciate that. Most of the groups here at the church have a Bible verse or a scripture or a passage that kind of encompasses what they do as a committee or as a Sunday school class or as a group. Does the mission committee have a verse or a scripture?
Matthew 28, the Great Commission, is obviously our roadmap, and that's what we try to do. That's what we try to reflect in our pledges, is that we are trying to help people spread the gospel here in Davidson, Forsyth County, North Carolina, the U.S., and the world. That is our goal.
So as our listeners know, our church is celebrating 250 years. If you haven't picked up on that from some of the other podcast episodes, then you may want to go back and take another listen. But we're celebrating 250 years, which is amazing. And I know we have supported missions from the very beginning. As the Mission Committee and as missions in general, what do you hope for Freeburg for the next 250 years and beyond?
Well, my hope would be that we would continue here at Freeburg. We start teaching the importance of mission and how to go about mission very, very early. We start with our children, and they learn biblically about the Great Commission. They learn by going into nursing homes and visiting, outreach. Then they move into youth, and they get more intense about their study of the Bible. They typically go through the book of Acts and understand what mission really means. It's not just a trip. And we begin by having them do local things. Then we go, out of the state. And then we take them out of the country and really get them out of their comfort zones. And that is something that I hope we continue here at Freeburg. I would love to see us probably do a little bit more in the community as we look to the future. No question, God has plans for us. And it is always our prayer in every mission committee meeting that we do His will, we hear His will, and that's what I think He will continue to bless.
Those are some great words. And, you know, God is always blessing us, even if we don't realize we're being blessed. So, Sherry, is there anything else that you would like to add that maybe we've not talked about?
I just think that Freeburg is an obedient church. We don't just financially support these missionaries. We pray for them. We stay in contact with them. We send them letters, or we might do phone calls. Freeburg understands the importance of mission. Without us helping others know of God's grace and His goodness, we can't continue for another 250, and that's how we've been here for 250 years, is we stand on the love of Jesus. We try to show the love of Jesus, and that's my prayer that we'll continue till He comes.
Now, if somebody wants to learn more about the Mission Committee and everything that you guys do, what's the best way for them to find out about it?
Well, they are very welcome to attend our Mission Committee meetings. We meet the last Tuesday of each month, and everybody's welcome. Anybody can come in and visit us and see who we are and what we're about. They're also very welcome to contact me or any member of the Mission Committee.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Sherry, for coming on the podcast today and talking about the Mission Committees. And if you're actually at Freeburg on the grounds, I strongly encourage you to take a look at the Mission Bulletin Board that is located in kind of the main entry area across from the parlor. There's a really beautiful wooden map that has they're actually like little airplane pins or little paper airplane pins. That's what they are. Kind of put where we support all the missionaries. And it's a great illustration of where Freeburg supports people throughout the world. You'll see there's some clusters here in the U.S., but then you'll see that there's others throughout the world, which is just an amazing illustration of everything that we do here at Freeburg and what the Mission Committee does. So thank you, Sherry. I appreciate you coming on today, talking about the Mission Committee and kind of enlightening us on some of the missionaries and what the work that they're doing and that what you guys are supporting. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having us.
We want to welcome to the podcast Judy McLeod, who's going to be reading the Moravian Daily Text for Tuesday, August the 15th.
When the ways of people please the Lord, He causes then their enemies to be at peace with them. Proverbs 16:7. Lord, cleanse the depths within our souls, and be resentment cease. Then at bound to all, in at bounds of love, our lives will spread your peace. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. Matthew 5:44-45. Much forgiven, may I learn love for hatred to return. Then my heart assured shall be, you and my God had pardoned me. True in God, we seek your love, even though those who hurt us, following your words and your actions, it's hard, but we know you are with us to enable us to our love beyond our own strength. Amen.
Thank you so much for joining us today for this episode of History from the Hill of Peace. We've made it to the end of the journey. Be sure to join us again next time as we chat with Jimmy once again about a couple more items in the historical room. There's so much to talk about, so we've invited him to come back to highlight some other items. Saying that, thank you to Jimmy for joining us for this episode. Thank you to Sherry Edwards for joining us and speaking about the Mission Society and everything it does here at Freeburg. And a huge thank you to Judy McLeod to reading our Moravian Daily Text. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And while you're at it, follow Freeburg Moravian Church on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And be sure to check out our church website, freeburg.church. If you live in the Winston-Salem, North Carolina area, or if you're visiting, join us Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. We'd love for you to join us for worship here on the Hill of Peace. Thank you.